welcome to the Two Coffee Teacher Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I am Alex. Welcome back. We are two young educators who really want to contribute to our field. So on this podcast, we're talking about education, relevant content that we can apply in our classrooms. So we're hoping that this podcast can also encourage educators without needing that second cup of coffee.
If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We're glad to have you. If you're a regular subscriber, thanks for joining us this week.
So for today's main topic, we're going to be discussing service learning opportunities in our classrooms, districts, or
abroad.
Just the schools in general.
Sure.
But before we get started, so it's February now, Josh, right. And we are a full 4 to 5 weeks, about 4.5 weeks, into our full-time student teaching experiences. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Can you hear the tiredness in my voice? I'm restraining it.
I can feel that you might need a nap after we do this recording.
Maybe.
So with that being said, we have received feedback from many of our listeners,
sure,
both through iTunes, which we hope that you are rating us, giving us that 5-star rating,
leaving
us a comment about how much you love us. But
mm-hmm,
both through those ratings and also just some of the feedback conversations that we've had with some of our listeners, they've expressed their excitement about how they want to stay updated and see how we are growing as educators and seeing
through this process
and listening,
yeah,
how,
okay,
our experiences are going. So I figured that it might be a good idea to start this podcast as the first one that's airing February 2016. Hard to believe that we're already a month into the year.
Yeah.
But I think I think it would be fun to just kind of talk about how we're doing in those experiences in our schools.
Sure. Yeah, I'll go first. I'll go ahead. So I'm working with sixth graders,
okay,
in middle school. I'm really enjoying it. I've worked with eighth grade in the past, and this is a little different. But I think when I showed up for student teaching, it didn't overwhelm me, which was good. You know,
mm-hmm,
there wasn't anything that was too surprising for me. I really enjoy it. No, the kids are great. The school is great. My cooperating or host teacher is wonderful. She's,
mm-hmm,
very accommodating. Loves using technology, which is great for me.
Sure.
And it's a pretty good experience. We haven't talked too extensively about my experience. Did you have any questions you wanted to ask?
Well, yeah,
about?
I guess. I mean, what are some fun kind of activities you're doing with your students? I mean, maybe how do you enjoy the schedule of maybe a middle school setup or a pace versus, say, high school? Now, we're not going to disclose our locations of our student teaching
just
experiences,
to be sensitive,
but
yeah,
we are
fine.
In Virginia. And for those of you that are maybe not necessarily familiar with Virginia, in the standards of learning, sixth grade U.S. history is a non-SOL class,
yes,
meaning,
sir,
that there isn't the pressure of the standardized testing. I know we've had many discussions on this show and outside just in our own time about it. So when you don't have an SOL class, it means that you are very flexible in the pacing, how in-depth you want to go with certain
content. Yeah.
Of course, it is required that you do cover the standards and the curriculum framework. But
with that
being said, you can kind of pick and choose which is more important, which you just want to touch on.
It's been nice.
Or maybe what you want to do activities with. So I guess my question to you is, with your experience in working with your cooperating teacher, how are you enjoying a class where you do have that flexibility?
Well, I think it's good because we still do have a strong curriculum and we have a pace that we still want to go through. Like you said, I'm teaching U.S. history to 1865, so we're talking globes, maps, early Native Americans, all the way up to Civil War. And so that's a lot of content to cover, right?
Yeah.
But I really enjoy the pace and the way that we get to really open up through a lot of those topics. Like you said, we don't have a standardized SOL test that accommodates that. We take them through benchmarks, but you know that really is for us to just kind of assess where our students are at. That's not something that is formally mandated, you know, like an SOL might be. But dude, it's honestly it's so much fun. My particular teacher is piloting class iPads, which is so cool because the rest of my school doesn't have one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they're piloting iPads in my class, which is great because that opens up so many opportunities to use things. We do a lot of HyperDocs, which is very cool. Are you familiar with HyperDocs at all?
I am not, or actually, excuse me, I am, but I think some of our audience members might not be. Yeah. If you want to touch on that a little bit.
So we do a lot of HyperDocs, which is basically imagine like a Google Doc or a Google Slide, and the students can work through it like they might a worksheet in that traditional sense, but it'll have videos, links that they can follow to, and that's kind of like launches them off into different directions.
Sure.
Which is a lot of fun because they seem to enjoy that a little bit more in the traditional worksheet. We were doing stuff with timelines a couple weeks ago. That was really cool. It's been a really, really good experience so far. It's very flexible, but also I do like, we have 90 minutes. I think you're on, are you in 45 minutes?
Yeah, I am. I'll touch on that in a few minutes.
So I'm a 90 minute blocks, which is nice because we really stick with those students. I don't feel rushed at all when I, you know, when I'm working through something.
Sure.
Which is good.
That is good. So you touched on the HyperDoc. So this is going to be my quick little tangent before we get back to our conversation. So with HyperDoc, so there's a platform for any teacher to use. It's free. It's called Zaption.
Zaption. Can you spell that?
Yeah, that is Z. Z as in zebra, A P T I O N.
Okay, that's Zaption. What I thought. So, I didn't know if it was one or two.
So it's a very similar to a kind of like a HyperDoc thing where you create your own video, you create your own presentation, but as you work through that video, you can create pauses where students have to type in fill in the blank answers.
And oh,
have
sure.
to access
okay.
an extra resource that can help them answer a question. You can do multiple choice.
Neat.
You can even do drawings. It's a very it's like an interactive reading or like an interactive video sort of activity which kind of guides the student through different parts of whatever content or whatever activity you're doing.
That's
so
neat.
Just want to plug that real quick. That kind of made me think of that. So
yeah, that's cool.
But that is cool. So I'm on a bit of an opposite schedule as
you're 45 minute blocks.
I'm about 50 minutes, 45, 50.
Yeah.
But so I see my kids every single day, which is
awesome. 100 of them.
Yeah. I was able to learn names in the first week, which
nice.
Was excellent. I mean, that really helped for just continuity.
Reinforcing
sake,
them.
But
yeah.
Yeah, with that being said, when you only have 45, 50 minutes in a class period, I mean, time flies.
Yeah.
So, but with that being said, as a 7th grade U.S. History 2 student teacher, that is also a not SOL. So, like you said,
wait, 7th grade isn't an SOL?
It is not an SOL.
Oh, I didn't know
anymore.
That.
Yeah, 8th grade is the only one, but
that's got to be recent, right? I feel like the 7th grade.
Within the past couple of years.
Okay.
So, with that being said, I'm on a similar situation where we can have the flexibility to go pretty in-depth with certain pieces of content.
Mm-hmm.
So with that also being said, since they're only 45-minute classes, we sometimes have to consider that if we want to work on a piece of content or we want to do an activity, we have to know that we have to allow 2 to 3 days to teach maybe one lesson. So. Like, we have experience, I know many of our classmates and our peers in the middle education program or the elementary education program, you're creating the lesson plan format where you're trying to cram all these different activities in. Well,
because you want to do so much cool stuff, right?
Now, with maybe one of those lesson plans that we practice writing, we have all these cool activities, that might be a week-long lesson plan.
Right, it doesn't go as fast as you want. I've
and,
seen a little bit of that
And I think I'm
well.
Okay with that, too, because that means that, you might be doing a unit on, like, for example, I'm doing a unit right now on the Jazz Age, and I'm talking about, we talked about the roaring economics of the 1920s, the Great Migration. And we're getting into some cultural aspects with many of the key figures that were part of the Harlem Renaissance and really contributed to some American culture and further promoted that diversity in our music and our art and our writing as well. So
it's a cool time.
Definitely cross-discipline too.
Yeah.
But I'm spending like 2 weeks going over maybe 4 or 5 different key individuals.
Now, is that your students like processing or is that the time it takes to work through content?
It's definitely both because with 7th grade, it's a bit of an awkward time. It's when they're really starting to develop their own thoughts and they're kind of working or climbing the ladder of being able to think for themselves and not needing to raise your hand just to reassure themselves, and they're more, a little bit more confident in how answer questions and how they read instructions. So
that's interesting, because my experience is very different. With sixth grade, I definitely see more of like the remnants of elementary school slowly leaving them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. In seventh grade, it slowly leaves a little bit more. This is where you're really pushing the students to not have to lean on the teacher to make sure this question is right, or that's make sure they're understanding something in one way.
Yeah,
you kind of want them to think for themselves. So
yeah,
I like the ability to pace, because it allows more time for them to understand the material. They have multiple means of obtaining the material than figuring out what to do with it and how to understand it too. So
that's cool, man.
That setup's been fun. I'm definitely enjoying it as we're getting ready to move towards the Great Depression. Well, that'll kind of work through these last 2 or 3 weeks that we have before we move on to our high school placements.
Going fast.
It is flying by, but
we'll have to keep everybody posted in a future episode as we move kind of forward.
Yeah, on absolutely. That. But as you know, time flies when you're having fun. I know I'm having fun having a conversation about how awesome our experiences are, but I think this is a good time to transition into our main topic for today. So with that, let's go to our thoughts and let's create a conversation about some service learning.
All right.
What do you think, sir? When you think service learning, how would you, at least service learning as it pertains to our schools, what do you think about that? How would you define that?
Well, I think it's important to clarify what we mean by that. So I'll take a stab at it, and you can tell me what you think. Okay. But I think the important thing is, in service learning, first of all, the students have to do something selflessly, okay, right? So not for a grade, right? Because if it's for a grade, I feel like there's a different motive, mm-hmm, right? And it can't be because maybe something we're telling them they have to do, right? That's community service. That's what happens when you get in trouble with the law, right? Mm-hmm. But if they're serving out of like, this is something that we have, this is something we want to do, and they're motivated out of the goodness of their heart to do that, I think that's one thing. They also have to learn with that, though. And I think that makes a really interesting dynamic when students feel motivated to do something positive in their communities while also learning as well. I think that's a really valuable but hard to blend together dynamic. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that is difficult, and that's something that maybe we can try and answer a little bit more.
Yeah.
But when I think service learning, I don't think it necessarily has to be doesn't have to be a curricular connection.
You don't think so?
I think if maybe you're a school, or if you're a principal, or if you're a teacher pitching the idea of service learning, then if you're able to connect it from a curricular standpoint, that might strengthen the reason to adopt the program.
Okay.
Well, but I think that service learning, it doesn't have to be a curricular. Like, for example, many school districts will require that students have X amount of community service hours by the time they graduate, and those mm-hmm hours can be accumulated starting in sixth grade. I also think that a lot of times, like for extracurricular activities, depending on what kind of organization that is, they will require that you have to have maybe a certain number of you are only allowed to have a certain number of missed absences. You have to maybe do this project with the organization, and oh, by the way, you have to do this kind of community service or interactive project that maybe relates to like the mission statement of that organization.
I don't know. I think I would disagree on your definition. I think it has to apply to the curriculum. It has to have an academic learning focus. Otherwise, I think it's community service.
Okay.
You see what I mean? I think there's a difference. Like,
so you do think there's a difference between community service and service learning?
Absolutely. I think community service is kind of what you were talking about, where maybe a club decides we want to do something cool to help our community, or, you know, like if you, I mean, again, like my example, like if you get in trouble with the law, you may be assigned a certain number of community service hours. But I think service learning is when we do a service that is positive,
okay,
but it's connected and we learn from it. You know what I mean? I think there is a difference. And I think what happens is a lot like we strive for service learning, but it ends up becoming community service. Does that make sense? So maybe a school will say, okay, we want to be a green school, and that's a great thing to do, but we want to build a garden. We want to do a garden. So we get everybody on board and we spend some time building the garden, and that's great. Now we have a green school. But like, I don't know if this, but we want the students to learn something from that.
I think there's still plenty of learning opportunities that are in what you are saying is community service. I think where you might be struggling a little bit is that I think you have a negative connotation to community service.
No, I don't know. There's not a direct connection to learning. They may learn something naturally, but in community service, I don't think there's an opportunity to reflect or to apply academic knowledge or problem solve and work through critical thinking steps.
Let's try and take this conversation in a different direction, right? So, because I've always thought of community service to just servicing the community, that includes having a reflection and a learning experience. I'll talk about my high school or my experience growing up. So this is actually just a whole state of Maryland thing. In Maryland, you have to, and again, you can relate to this as well. So you have to have 60 hours of community service.
I had 75.
Just kidding. It was 75. 75?
Okay.
Yeah.
Parker and I grew up in different counties, but...
I think 60, yeah, all right. I think a Maryland standard is 60, but some counties have
maybe higher. My county just went harder.
For me, it was 60, okay. Or at least for my county. So we had to have a minimum of 60 hours accumulated of community service. You can start those hours in sixth grade, and you have to have 60 by the time you graduate. Mm-hmm. And that was a graduation requirement. So,
yeah.
But when we had one... In order to get those hours, each school had a huge list of different things and different organizations that you can work with. But with that being said, after you were done with whatever helpful thing that you were doing, you had to fill out that sheet, and that on which you had to describe what you learned about it, whether it be skills, just extra knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then there was also another section where you had to connect the activity or the service that you conducted with a subject in your school.
So it has to connect to some kind of school. So if you make that connection to some kind of cool school academic curricular mm-hmm. content, I would say
whoever the service coordinator was at your school, they actually read all these reflections and they had to determine, all right, these hours cannot count unless the student is able to demonstrate that they were able to connect
something that they did in the community to what they're studying in school.
Yeah,
I would say that's
so. I can't go down to the local food shelter and pack canned boxes for Thanksgiving for 5 hours and have that count for community service unless I'm able to connect that activity to something that I have learned in the school.
See, I would call that service learning. Yeah.
Okay.
As long as we can make a connection to what we're studying, mm-hmm. have a practical outlet for it in the service, and like reflect on our learning, I would call that service learning.
Sure.
Yeah.
So in terms of service learning programs or activities, this is from a national standpoint. So there's a 2008 study conducted by the Corporation for National Community Service.
Okay.
This is 2008, by the way, so slightly outdated, but...
Oh, gosh, 2008's outdated now?
I guess so. With the exception of this 2008 one, the most recent study I could find before that was 1999, and I felt that the 17-year difference was actually too much. Like, 7-ish years.
Yeah.
17, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
Anyways, this study was conducted. Approximately 68% of schools, both public, private, or excuse me, including public, private, and charter, 68% of those schools have students participating in recognized service activities.
68 out of how many?
68%.
Oh, 68%. Okay.
Yes. So you have just about 7 out of 10 schools that have programs where students are required to participate in service activities.
Awesome.
I think it's a pretty good number. Yeah. I think it would be okay if maybe we raise that number a little bit.
Sure.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that number has changed over the past 8 years for the better, since I know in 1999, the previous percentage was 59%.
Wow. So, okay, so growth.
So definitely some growth there.
Right. I mean, that's positive change if I've ever heard of it. And I mean, so much can change in 8 years. I was thinking about this the other day, but like Obama was elected in 2008.
Yeah.
Right. And that was just on the cusp of social media. I think Facebook and Twitter were both invented in 06.
Mm-hmm.
And now at the end, almost at the end of his presidency, the shit, like how much social media has changed.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Right.
Unreal.
I mean, you can, so much can happen in 8 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I mean, even when that study was done, I bet you it's even higher than 68% at this point.
It very well could be. So let's, here's, I have a question to pose. So
hit me.
So we have 7 out of 10 schools essentially that have programs students have to partake in service.
Yeah.
Do you think it's more beneficial either from a service standpoint or from a student learning standpoint to have programs where students have the flexibility to choose what they do and what they can branch out in? Or do you think it might be better for the school to kind of pick one big focus and then all the service learning that the students do during their time at that school is focused on this one organization or this one interest?
Interesting. So your question is, should students be able to pick how they do their service learning, or should the school mandate it? Is that kind of what your question is?
Kind of. So here's where I'm thinking, right?
Okay.
So I know of schools that where they have their service, or maybe not necessarily mandatory service learning, but they do have an organization that is their focus, like charity or their focus nonprofit.
Oh,
that
concentrated effort.
That they profit in. Yeah, and there's that concentrated effort where anything that they do is service related is geared towards that organization.
Yeah.
So whether they're doing bake sales, whether they're doing packing, whether they are going out and doing recruitment, whatever the activity may be, everything's all eggs are in that one organization's basket. Could that be better for the students learning or for the organization learning versus maybe where you have a list of 20 different organizations and the students can kind of go out and do whatever they want within those organizations?
In my experience in that, like, we both came from a place where we were required to do service learning for a certain number of hours between 6 and 12. The school provided, here's a list of ideas for students who may not have the option or opportunities afforded to them to, like, you know, just know where they could serve and make connections.
Yeah.
I would be against like a concentrated effort in one or two or three places in this regard, in that how can I tell a student where they're going to make a connection? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to play devil's advocate to that point, I can also get behind that if we are organized. Okay, so my common example is like the garden. Our school is going to make a garden, right?
Yeah.
So you have to do a certain number of service hours by the end of the year to help this project. If all the students are learning in science about the positivity of the number of foliage in an acre and stuff like that, and there's a practical application for that, I'm on board. I think that's really, really positive. But if there isn't that curricular connection that all the students can relate to, then I would say let them pick their own, because you and I may find connections in different places than other students would.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There has to be that curricular connection if we're gonna ask students to be all in.
Yeah. For me, if you go all in, then I think that it could be very beneficial for the students to see change over time. So if all the students are told, all right, you're working with this organization for the rest of the school year or for the rest of your time at this school, then I think there could be a lot of potential for there to be a ton of reward and investment if a student knows that they're going to be working with an organization from sixth grade and then seeing what they've been able to do for that organization over 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
With that being said, on the flip side, I can also see the other side of the argument where, all right, well, what if the student just doesn't have any common interests or there aren't any curricular connections to that sure. organization. So I do see that flip side of it. But I also, I think I could really get behind supporting a program where students are invested or they do have all their eggs in one basket. I think could be pretty beneficial.
I think just a few weeks ago, we heard, if you've been listening to us for a while, you listened to our Unconference episode a few episodes back, and we talked about how one of the things that Alex and I are very passionate about here through one of our professors, Dr. Michelle Coote, is the NASA Marie Academy. An academy that supports Maasai girls in Africa who, you know, don't have easy access to education. And a few weeks ago, we heard that we've been raising a ton of money for that, and they started drilling a well. It was fantastic. And I think I can speak for all of us when we felt a surge of pride and accomplishment in our work to raise money and support for those girls.
Especially since at least our graduating class of teacher candidates, we've been working with this organization, and we've been working and learning about this school really since we entered 370 back in 2013.
Yeah.
And of course the school's been around for longer than that, but
right.
we've been emotionally invested for 2 years now.
So I can definitely see the benefit of having everyone work in that one place, because we all feel that our own community sense of accomplishment in meeting that goal. But I don't know, when I was in high school, I had a lot of personal growth occur in my own service learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I really could go either way. Something I was thinking about as we're kind of wrapping up this episode, this is something I was thinking about as I was kind of prepping and mulling over what we were going to be talking about today. Really solid way to integrate service learning into your curriculum really is applicable field trips.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because that's two birds with one stone. That's getting your students outside the classroom doing something, but you're also challenging them to be active in their communities and apply something that you've been learning. Obviously, if it's a field trip, most likely it has a connection to what you're learning in the classroom.
Yeah.
Right? So that's knocking out a whole bunch of birds with one stone, mm-hmm. as that saying goes. You know what I mean? Practical field trips that connect to the classroom and allow students opportunity to see change happen through service learning. That's huge for students.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good place to end our conversation on service learning. Different pathways that you can go down. For those of you that are teachers that have been in the field for a while, I'm pretty curious to see what you all think about service learning, but I also want to see what kind of programs that you all have in your schools, if you have any programs at all, or if you don't have any programs, would you want to try and introduce something to your administration? Let's continue this conversation a little bit that we've had today.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
Hit us up on our Facebook group. That's Two Coffee Teachers. We'll post some follow-up questions once we publish this episode. And then also follow us on Twitter. That's @2CoffeeTeachers. Or please leave us a voicemail. Our voicemail's been pretty dry lately. We've gotten some hits on it, but it's pretty cool when we get to when we're doing our editing and we get to implement a voicemail and then build off of that voicemail to create a conversation.
And that brings people to be a part of the show, which I like.
I do too. So if you want to be a part of our show, come join us for a few moments via the voicemail mailbox. That is 443-300-8908. That's 443-300-8908.
We'd also love it if you could rate us on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. That's probably the best way for people to hear about the podcast outside of you just telling them yourselves. We love the people who listen to this podcast, who share it with their peers and the people that they work with, and we're really thankful for you guys as well. Keep doing what you're doing. But the best way to grow our community is to get those ratings online so we can reach other people who may not run into this show by happenstance. So go online, rate it, Two Coffee Teachers. Give us 5 stars. We work hard here, you know? We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for being part of the Two Coffee Teacher podcast. Keep up the good work in the classroom without needing that second cup of coffee.
Thanks again, everyone. We will see you in a couple weeks.
Bye. I can see the sweet sun pouring down in the strawberry sky. Tall grass dancing down by the St. John's Riverside. And I can see Maggie running through the fields full of wild.
appreciate.